The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. If you'd like to email the program, keep sending those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, after walking approximately 48 miles yesterday in downtown London, it feels good to be doing something stationary again today. A lower key day after a lot of activity. As I tweeted out yesterday, we had a big field trip. We may not have walked quite 48 miles, but it felt like it at times. But we really did get to see a lot, the campers that are here and the workers too, including my family. We've been around for 19 months and have been to London several times, but we saw quite a few things yesterday that we hadn't seen yet. So it was great to see a bit of London and to continue on with our cultural and historical education, and to also spend time together with God's family. I appreciate Richard Palmer filling in. I'll begin the show with an email that came in response to his show from yesterday. It says, thank you, Mr. Palmer, for this enlightening program. Jeremiah 17 sums up all of our problems today. Now it's even more pronounced because the devil and his demons are here on earth and taking advantage of our deceived hearts. It says, the devil and his demons are strengthening the selfish heart of people. And for this reason, we see the strife and the war and the selfish attitudes and so on. So Mr. Palmer gave a show yesterday, Richard Palmer, that is, about God's work and Bible prophecy and what we rely upon to watch and to warn. On today's show, we'll later on, actually, I'll get more into some of the sites that we saw yesterday in London. I also have more emails on top of that one I just gave to you there to get to later on in the show. And also, we'll be giving you more sounds from PYC. Some of these sounds, quite a few of them, actually. Previewing it this morning, quite a few of them I haven't heard. I've missed most of the lunches. I'm there to greet the campers each morning at breakfast and to hopefully set the tone for the day. But most of the lunches have quite a few of the dorm songs that they've put together and the announcements for clean dorms and such. And so I miss those mostly because that happens about 1 hour before I go on the air live here. So yes, as I was listening to those sounds this morning, there's quite a few sounds in there that really were enlightening to me as well. I think you'll enjoy it as we conclude today's program with more from PYC at Edstone. Well, I'll begin. I just have one story mainly that I want to get through here in this first segment from the week. The title says it all, America is losing its longest war. Pretty amazing. 8 years ago, it says here, Barack Obama premised his foreign policy on the idea that the Iraq war was a distraction from the real task at hand in Afghanistan. So think about that. We're right in the midst of a campaign season now with Donald Trump squaring off against Hillary Clinton and all of these campaign statements, all of these promises, all of these critiques, as one side or the other looks at the current administration or looks at the other side and says, well, here's the problem with what they're doing. And if you go back just 8 years, there was Senator Obama saying, look, Iraq's been a huge distraction, and it's taken us away from the real task at hand, which is to win the war in Afghanistan. And the week has this to say. Anyone think that Mr. Obama has completed the task there? Obama himself isn't so sure, it says. In the past month, he announced the further drawdown of American troops in Afghanistan from 9,800 to 8,400. It was an alteration of his plan to keep just 5,500 troops there. It seems he wants to keep just enough troops to prevent a disaster on his watch, but just few enough to look like he's living up to his promise of finishing the job. But it's becoming clearer by the day that America is losing. America is losing the longest war in its history. Here it's been going on now for, 15 years? And it's becoming clearer by the day that America's losing. This article goes on and talks about all of the provinces and areas and territories in Afghanistan that the Taliban has retaken. But here it's the longest war in American history, and America's losing. It's incredible. I mean, we've handed Iraq to Iran. We've handed Syria to Russia. We handed Egypt to the Muslim Brotherhood before the Egyptian army wised up and gained control again. We handed Libya to ISIS. And now America is set to lose its longest war in history. Where in the Middle East, in the past 10, 15, even 20 years, where in the Middle East has it actually worked out well for the United States? Has it actually strengthened the position of the United States? Where in the Middle East over the past 10 or 15 years has American power been bolstered and America's enemies, their power, been diminished? Where? Where do you see it? You don't see it. It's all playing out exactly as the Bible prophesied. After it removed, this is the article, after it removed the Taliban from government 15 years ago, the Taliban is recapturing larger parts of the country, making governance of the nation's far-flung regions from Kabul impossible, and doing the most violence it has in years. Afghanistan's civilian casualty rates this year are near record levels. What was it all for? This article asks. I mean, what was it all for these 15 years? So-called surges along the way. Conquering the Taliban. Or so we thought. It says Obama's strategy in Afghanistan has been confused. He invested in a surge, which made America's operation there an extremely large counterterrorism force. But he never went all in for a counterinsurgency strategy or in building up the Afghan government. This meant more American casualties for a time, and it also meant more success against the Taliban. But almost as soon as these victories started to come in 2012, then America began withdrawing. It's just like what happened in Iraq. History is repeating itself. It's not just the Obama administration. It's the previous one as well, particularly when you look at Iraq. It says the president had soured on the war. He had preferred to fight. This is the one going back to 2008. He preferred to fight in Afghanistan. Remember? Iraq was a distraction. Iraq, we never should have gotten involved in. Afghanistan, that's where the real threat is. That's where we've got to put the real focus. It says, and he showed in the exact same way that George W. Bush did in Iraq, the much-touted surge in Baghdad and Anbar province turned out to be less of a long-term strategy for Iraq than a face-saving strategy for America's eventual exit. See, what does America have to show for these so-called surges? The one in Iraq and the smaller one in Afghanistan. What do we have to show for it? As now the Taliban is once again gaining ground. Finally here it says, without a major breakthrough in halted negotiations with insurgents, there's no plausible ending where America gets out of Afghanistan entirely without the Taliban putting the government in Kabul into mortal danger almost immediately. I mean, as soon as it's already dwindling down. What did it say? 8,400? And as soon as America is gone, well, we've had a preview of it in Iraq. Look at what happened there as soon as America left. As soon as America leaves, it puts the government in Kabul into mortal danger. Despite some good faith efforts by Afghanistan's National Unity Government to root out corruption, the black clouds gathering on the horizon seem to have driven corruption into overdrive. As jobbers, apparatchiks, and officials who are really in a helpless position try to get as much as they can out of the government before it falls to the ground. It's just every man for himself. Get a little bit of a piece of the pie before it's all destroyed. The Afghanistan war has been a demoralizing one for America's policy elite and its military. Yes, many Al-Qaeda operatives were killed and networks disrupted in the past 15 years, but it's become obvious now that complete victory over the Taliban in Afghanistan alone would require more blood and treasure than Americans are willing to invest. Beyond that, it would require a much more difficult confrontation with America's long-term quote-unquote ally, Pakistan, which has operated as a rear operating base for the Taliban. That's their base. They retreat into Pakistan when the going gets tough. And then when American forces are dwindled or dwindled down, then they come back. It says, so instead, America's longest war will almost certainly end in defeat. Well, we can add to that that it certainly will. In fact, I didn't get this quote, but go back and see what we said in November, or what was it, December 2001, right as we were unleashing America's wrath on the Taliban in Afghanistan. I mean, that's where it started. And as we wrote at the trumpet, we said, this is not going to end well. It's not going to end well for the United States. I mean, here's The Week talking about it this week. And we talked about it 15 years ago. 15 years ago. It's not going to work out well. How do we know? How do we know this? Leviticus 26, verse 19. And I will break the pride of your power, and I'll make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. That's how we knew. Well, there's still power there, as we've written so often before, but the will to use it is being shattered. God said, I will break the pride of your power. I mean, what strength does America have to show if it lacks the political will to fight and to support the military, to support those fighting out on the front lines? America is going to, I mean, it's increasingly being pushed into a position where it's just going to be helpless and won't be able to respond really to any threat around the world. Look at the prophecy in Daniel 11:40, which we've read so many times. America is not even mentioned there. Leaving ourselves wide open for a foreign invasion, that's where it's headed ultimately. But right now, I mean, just look at these verses in Leviticus 26, verse 19 I just read. Verse 20 says, your strength shall be spent in vain. I mean, all the blood spilled in Afghanistan, all the blood spilled in Iraq. After years, in this case, the longest war in America's history, after 15 years, and what do we have to show for it? All of the money, the trillions of dollars that we've poured into these regions, or this region, and what do we have to show for it? Well, Leviticus 26, it's being fulfilled. That's the pivotal prophecy in the Old Testament. One that we go back to often, one that is featured prominently in Herbert Armstrong's classic work, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll run down some of the sites that the youths were able to view yesterday in London, and also go through a few more emails. And don't forget, later on in the show, we've got more sounds from PYC. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
And welcome back to the program regarding yesterday's field trip for PYC here at Edstone, Philadelphia Youth Camp. Edstone style. Just the trip down was a memorable experience. 51 of us piling into a bus that we had rented for the day. And then the two-hour drive south, we were dropped off near the Globe Theater. It's the first time, I've never been in there yet, but it's the first time I've seen it. We just walked past and took a few pictures. And it's a fair bit smaller than I was anticipating. And evidently, when it was burned down, long ago, they reconstructed it to look just like it looked in the day. So certainly a distinctive structure there, right on the River Thames there. And we walked up along the river, saw a few of the sights and sounds, the people on the street, which in itself was interesting. One tuba player that was blowing flames of fire out of his tuba. Very interesting sight indeed. That of all the pictures that I had of our group moving through London, this was the one photo where they were all just as if frozen there watching this this performer play music and make flames. So we continued on with our journey over to Trafalgar Square. Speaking of lots of street performers, there's quite a few of those there as well. It's a bustling area right in the heart of London. And adjacent to the square, you have the National the National Art Gallery, or the Art Museum in London, with original paintings from Van Gogh and Da Vinci and Monet. That was, we only had about 30 or 40 minutes to rush through because we wanted to see a number of other things and spend most of our time in the British Museum at the end of the day. But in the short time that we had there at the National Gallery, we did see some of the most famous paintings in the world. Vincent Van Gogh's picture, Sunflowers, it's called. It goes for about $75 million, so we went ahead and bought it, brought it back to Edstone. Now, we didn't quite have enough pocket change to cover the cost for that, but it was definitely worth seeing. On our way to Westminster Abbey, and Big Ben was quite a popular stop where we got quite a few photos of that before proceeding up Whitehall Street, and we peered down number 10 Downing Street, of course, where the Prime Minister lives. And then from there, we had to hustle up to the British Museum, which is where we spent the last few hours of the day. And I'll just refer you back to the radio program that we did about a year ago, I guess just a little over a year ago. We also are going to repeat the British Museum, or Inside the British Museum television program, in a couple of weeks, so you may see that up on the website, featured prominently once again here in a week and a half or so. But I think the one thing that made that stop especially educational is that the day before our field trip, Chris Eames gave an hour-long lecture on what to look for in the British Museum, and I was really proud of all of the campers. Some of them had their own notes of things that they wanted to see. Of course, each little group of campers, there were about four or five per group, Their guide was either an assistant counselor or a counselor that was going around with handouts that Chris Eames had given to them. These are some of the artifacts that are of true biblical significance. And so there was, I guess you could say, leadership from that standpoint. But the campers themselves, also with their notebooks and their cameras, they were eager to make the most of that 2 or 3 hour stop. And so that was good to see. A bunch of teenagers, 13, 14, 15 years of age, even a couple of them coming up to me saying, wow, you see all this evidence. And to think that people can just dismiss the Bible as being a work of fiction. It's just incredible to think about the ignorance and the stubbornness and just the hostility in man when it comes to God and His Word, when it comes to the truth of the Bible, when it comes to the fact that God inspired it, that God revealed it. Well, it really helped, I think, to make the trip yesterday not only fun and enjoyable just to be with one another and to take pictures and things, but to also make it educational. It really has been, I think, for the campers and for us as workers. It's been an educational experience. One listener emails from Canada about PYCs in the past. Just wanted to thank you for sharing the experiences of PYC over the air and giving the listeners a glimpse of how important it is in the lives of our young people. It really does change their lives. My husband and I have witnessed the transformation in our own children. Being able to attend PYC was a wonderful blessing and privilege for our family, not just for them, but for us as well. We also learned so much from them when they returned. It was a family education. And so their three children, I know them well. They've come through a lot of the PYCs over the years. And as these parents bring out, they certainly benefited from the education as well. We had quite a few comments come in, by the way, regarding Monday's show, where we used that example of John Quincy Adams. This one here says, we had many great presidents. That includes Washington, Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt. And with all due respect, Mrs. Hillary Clinton does not match the greatness of these great presidents. I can't believe, it says, that a sitting U.S. president made the statement that Mrs. Clinton is the best qualified person for the presidency in history. I think that Mrs. Clinton falls into the category of leaders prophesied in Isaiah 3. That comes from, well, I'm not sure where that came from. This next one here, again, in response to Monday's show, if we compare the qualifications of the presidential candidates we have, such as Mrs. Clinton, and those qualifications, our founding fathers, and even the lesser presidents of the young country, we do see how much its very foundation has crumbled with leadership as a blatant indication of its ruin. Do we even know what our current leaders stand upon or even care? Says the background of our leaders now is very telling. This history of John Quincy Adams is very inspiring to notice. And the fact that most are not at all impressed by such a story these days also shows how much our foundation has crumbled. It says an uneventful presidency like that of John Quincy Adams would be a great time to set forth an example of how to live and live in peace and not to set an example of complacency, but excellency. After having seen the sacrifices made for the country, he then qualified to lead. He would cherish that and be ready to protect the legacy. Most always, the examples of leadership that draw our attention are set because they're forged out of crises. But here's another kind of an example to appreciate, not neglected by the Trumpet Daily radio show. He's pointing out the point that I made Monday, how that, you know, some would overlook Quincy Adams, his presidency, as being somewhat uneventful, and they wouldn't put him up to the level of his father or Washington or Jefferson or Abraham Lincoln. And yet, as I read to you on Monday, that quote from David McCullough, the historian. In his estimation, no one in history was better qualified to serve as president than John Quincy Adams. When you consider his upbringing, the fact that that family was right there at the crisis for this country, and the education that he received, the travels, the people that he spent time with, even as a youth, even as a teenager. Well, I went through a fair bit of that on Monday. This last one here, again, in response to Monday's show, it says, I really appreciate Monday's program about John Quincy Adams. Very helpful. My son is 11, and I'm trying to raise him while living under some less than ideal circumstances. It says, the hard part is that I'm no Abigail Adams. Well, who is? That was definitely, as I said Monday, a different time. And they were unique parents, John and Abigail, for sure. She writes here, my son has that craving of knowledge, but unfortunately, he also can be deeply fascinated by unimportant or bad knowledge. I'm convinced that if I can raise him, I can do anything. I'm also learning how to raise a daughter. If I don't raise her, her friends will. That's become very obvious. Those three items were very helpful that you covered in the show. The faith, the desire for knowledge, and the understanding of the times that we're living in. That's from the biography, John Quincy Adams by James Traub, where he said that that's what his early education was noted for, John Quincy Adams. The fact that he had such a passion for knowledge. The fact that he had this abiding Christian faith. And the fact that he had an extraordinary awareness of the dramatic moment in history in which he was living. You can see why he became a young man who was so qualified to serve as president. It all got back to his education. Let me just read you another excerpt from this biography, John Quincy Adams. It's talking about his education. The chapter title is The Flame is Kindled. And it's talking about, too, his parents. It says, both John and Abigail regarded the upbringing of children as a sacred and solemn obligation. That's right. They viewed it as something sacred. A sacred obligation they had as parents. It says, they did not embrace the French Enlightenment view of humans as inherently rational creatures and education as the encouragement of natural propensities. Though deeply steeped in that tradition, John and Abigail were heirs to a Puritan culture that saw human beings as fallen creatures who must be redeemed from sin through the most conscientious acts of cultivation. See, they had an understanding in that household. They didn't know all of God's truth, but they had an understanding of the fact that the human nature in man is innately selfish and evil and hostile to God's law. That's what it says in Jeremiah 17:9, Romans 8:7. Do you think maybe the parents of John Quincy Adams were familiar with those verses or others like them? Ephesians 2:2, 2 Corinthians 4:4. It says here, quoting from Abigail, education has made a greater difference between man and man than nature has made between man and brute. That's from John, the father. And that's what he wrote to Abigail in 1775. Education, what a difference it makes between two individuals, one who's educated and one who isn't. And in his view, it's a greater separation than between man and brute. It should be your care, therefore, and mine. Here's a husband. Here's a leader in a family writing to his wife saying that we've got to be on the same page for our children. We both have this sacred responsibility. And you know the history. If you heard Monday's show, you do anyway. that for 7 of the first 10 years of his life, John Quincy was pretty much just with his mother, while his dad was making sacrifices for the nation, a new nation. And then for 7 years, that included most of his teen years, he's there away from his mom in France, in Europe, and receiving instruction and direction and guidance from his dad. So here is the dad. Here is the head of the home. He's writing to his wife, saying, "It should be your care, therefore, and mine, to elevate the minds of our children and exalt their courage, to accelerate and animate their industry and activity, to excite in them a habitual contempt of meanness, abhorrence of injustice and inhumanity, and an ambition to excel in every capacity, faculty, and virtue." That's our goal. That should be our goal as husband and wife, as parents. A little later on in the chapter, it says John Adams had pronounced ideas about education, but they were not his alone. Listen to this. You talk about a different time. And boy, we're just going back a little over 2 centuries, but you talk about a different time. It says here, "The men who were to found the United States understood that while a nation of masters and servants needed only to elevate the one and abase the other," that's the way it was in most nations, where you had the one master and everybody else was a servant. And so you just elevated the ideals, the beliefs, the thoughts, the goals, the laws of that one master, no matter how unjust the system might have been. But in a nation of free men, well, they needed to cultivate the gifts of all the citizens. It says here, every man in a republic is public property. As the physician and patriot Benjamin Rush put it, a monarch could compel acquiescence, but a free people could be governed only through consent. A republic would work only if citizens could be trained to overcome their natural selfishness, pettiness, and factionalism. It's very similar to some of the quotes that we've preserved for you in Character in Crisis and No Freedom Without Law, these booklets that talk about America's founding, that quote the founders saying that if we're not a religious and moral people, this will not work. The republic will not last. And so this biographer here, this historian, he's saying, look, you can look at John Adams and his wife and see that these are some pretty strong and pronounced ideas about education. But look, they weren't alone. This is the way all the founders viewed it. I mean, we all have an obligation. We all have a sacred responsibility. And that begins to break down. The family begins to fall apart. Well, the whole republic will be in danger of collapsing. The Bible reveals that there's a spirit in man. And you can go through and study 1 Corinthians chapter 2. I won't take the time to go through all of these scriptures I have here in my notes. But we have to use that spirit, and parents have to help train the spirit of youth. This is where education comes in. Mark Twain said, "The man who does not read good books has no advantage over the man who can't read them." That's what John Adams was getting at when he wrote to his wife. Education has made a greater difference between man and man than nature has made between man and brute. See, what difference is it if you have the ability to read, but you don't study and read, and you don't dig into to your Bible and to history? Well, as Mark Twain brought out, it gives you no advantage over the man who can't read at all. As I was saying to our campers the other day, the Bible is just the foundation, but I mean, it's the foundation. And that's what we have to go to. As Jesus said, we have to live by every word that proceeds from out of the mouth of God. That's how we really have a rock-solid foundation, an immovable foundation, by living according to those words, by being doers of the word, not hearers only, as the Bible says elsewhere, but doers of God's truth. And what a happy and joyous life it will be when you're out there seeking after the truth and then applying it. Happy is the man that finds wisdom and that gets understanding, it says in the Proverbs. Let me just take you through a couple of verses here in 1 Timothy in conclusion, 1 Timothy chapter 4. We've got to save a little bit of time for the sounds of PYC. But I've got a few minutes here left for some instruction that Paul was giving to his assistant, a young man. I mean, at this point, he wasn't a teenager, Timothy, but he was perhaps in his early 30s, maybe mid-30s. And Paul says to him, and there was a crisis in the church at the time. You can see that at the start of 2 Timothy. Lots of people were falling away from the truth. They were getting away from that spiritual foundation. And everything started to crumble in the church. It says in verse 6, 1 Timothy 4, if you put the brethren in remembrance of these things, you shall be a good minister of Jesus Christ, nourished, it says, nourished up in the words of faith and good doctrine, whereunto you have attained. Put the brethren in remembrance of these things. I mean, this is good doctrine. We're talking about nourishment here. We're talking about good health, happiness, joy. Verse 13, it says, till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. See, give attendance to your studies, reading, exhortation, doctrine. You look at that. Talk about a different time period. And even then, as I said, a lot of people were falling apart spiritually. You talk about a different time period educationally, comparing today to the days of John Quincy Adams. Look at today and all the distractions and the hours and hours that so many young people spend with television and phones and computers. And how, for the average person, they're reading maybe a few minutes a day, just reading, basic reading and study. It's no wonder the whole system is beginning to break down. It's lack of education. Hosea 4, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. We've gotten so far away from God's truth. The foundation is breaking down. Well, it's already broken in so many ways. And so there's been a real focus, as I say, on education, on study, and reading, on proving God's word true, proving God's existence. There's been a real focus on all of that here in this edition of the Philadelphia Youth Camp. A real focus on becoming more spiritually refined and more culturally educated. Becoming more of a cultured individual. When we come back, we'll set up the final segment that we have, which is quite a few sounds of PYC. There's lots to, as I say, to listen for on this particular edition. Lunchroom activities and announcements. There's some bits in there from the automotive maintenance class for the fellas, as well as flower arranging for the gals, and even some original music. Well, I guess original in the sense that it's sung by one of the dorms, but it's a song that's been around for some time. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Before we get to the sounds of PYC, let me just, this is too good to pass up. This comes from one of our listeners in Alaska who is absolutely in love with the program. I've listened to every episode this summer, he says. I listened to it on the Podcast Addict app. I'm not familiar with that one, but an interesting name, a Podcast Addict. It says it's really great because I can download the most current episode using my Wi-Fi at home, and then he doesn't have to use up minutes on his phone or costs on his phone. It says, like I said, I haven't missed an episode since summer started. I was an infrequent listener before then, but my car broke down this spring, and I had to start riding my bike to work. I started listening to the show on the ride to and from work. Now my car is back, and I still listen every day. I honestly believe that God allowed my car to break down to get me to listen to this show. And all the shows, really. Once I started listening, and I mean really actively listening, I was hooked. And it has benefited my life greatly. What a blessing to have this radio program. Well, he has more, but we're just out of time. We've got to move into these sounds from PYC Edstone 2016. Don't forget to send us your feedback, more emails like the one I just read to you. Email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. And as we conclude the program, enjoy some of the sounds of PYC 2016.
Beautiful, yeah. Good. 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 prepared, you're looking to see where the ball is hit. If it's hit down this way, it's a longer throw to get it through.
Go!
Oh,
Davis is going to run a little bit forward and pass it to Georgia. Don't just stop it when you catch it, Georgia. Just run forward through a little bit. And then go to the back of your lines and we'll start it all over again. Off you go, Sarah.
Woo! Okay, go Chrissy!
Mr. Hostetler has some awesome ones.
Oh yeah, boys, that's how you get the guy out. I'm scared for him.
Weathering an early assault. A good narrative here.
So after weathering an early assault, 1G prevailed over 2G. So the score was 2-1. So well done to 1G.
Only from tonight.
Okay. Hoe kwam dat?
Hoe moet je het doen? Dat weet u toch? Only from tonight.
I'll show him where for me on three. David's dedicated daughters. One, two,
David's dedicated daughters.
Nice. 1, 2, 3.
Maximum inzet.
That means maximum effort in Dutch.
Oh yeah.
Approximately 50 minutes to actually do hands-on flower arranging themselves, and they produced really good arrangements.
Yeah, they did well. Very well, and I think they enjoyed it.
Yeah, they did.
So I hope they put it into practice when they get home as well, to do a Friday night arrangement.
Right.
That would be nice for them to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
Good job, guys.